Hello, and welcome to episode 15 of the East Anglian Theatre Podcast. Welcome one and all, I'm back on home turf, holed up in my sweaty studio, regretting my decision to allow my not-so-fragrant dogs in here with me. My holiday is over, so now I only have my inexperience and laziness to blame for any lapses in the audio
quality.
God, I'm hilarious. For those that like a formal introduction, my name's Ray Tempesta, and I'm offering you a virtual handshake. I am the host of this ill-conceived, amateurish, but hugely popular podcast. And when I say hugely popular, I mean if you don't measure popularity by all the usual standards, such as subscribers, followers, five-star reviews, and recommendations. Within my studio, though, I am extremely popular, although I am currently holding some dog treats, so I may not be getting a completely unbiased opinion from my pets. For those that haven't listened before, the podcast is split into three parts. Section one is where I like to think people have an interest in what I've been up to in the world of theatre. I usually include a review of a show I've been to see recently, but that won't be the case this time as I've been too busy trying to avoid sunburn in Spain to watch anything back home. Section two is the part where I take on the role of a cut-price Graham Norton and interview a guest involved in the production locally. No red chair for my guests, I'm afraid, though, so even if they'd like me to pull the lever and let them make a quick exit, they have to sit there and pretend to get along with me. Section 3, and congratulations to those that can last the distance, it's where I take a quick look at some of the upcoming shows and audition opportunities on offer in the region. That's all coming up, of course, but first, let me bore you with some details of my social media pages. The East Anglian Theatre Podcast has a Facebook, Twitter and Instagram account. And it kind of has to, not least because it's how I interact with you guys outside of this medium. If you do like what you hear, please do consider giving the pages a like, a follow, a share, or whatever. You can also find all episodes of the podcast, plus my reviews for the various shows I've seen, on my website, eatpod.co.uk. That's eatpod.co.uk. There's also a page on there where you can contact me to tell me how my podcast has changed your life, or alternatively, to get in touch about any shows you think might be worth featuring, or even if you'd like to endure some misery yourself and be a guest on a future episode. Anyway, now that's taken care of, let's officially move on to section one, where I ask myself, what have I been up to theatre-wise recently? Well, the answer this time is, not a great deal. I mentioned on a previous episode that I'd been cast in a fantastic play called The Welkin, which was written by Lucy Kirkwood. I took a copy of the play on holiday with me, with every intention of learning my lines, and whilst I did that to a certain extent, I didn't quite devote the attention that I normally would to the passages that were relevant to me. And that wasn't down to a lack of discipline, I hasten to add, it was simply because I genuinely find the play so enthralling that it's been difficult to just stop reading when my character's lines have ended. As a consequence, I've probably read the play front to back about a dozen times now. The good news is that this means I've hopefully got a fairly thorough understanding of the play, and I can probably understudy some of the other parts too. The bad news is, at this admittedly very early stage, is that I've not yet got as in-depth an appreciation of my character that I'd hoped to have had by now. Since arriving home, though, I've had a couple of rehearsals with my new cast and production team. It's a lovely mix of people, some of whom are completely new to me, some I've had the pleasure of watching in other productions, and there's also a couple that I've worked with before too. Our director, Jez Pike, has immediately set to work putting us through our paces, quite literally. One of our exercises aimed at building an innate understanding of each other's movements involved us trotting around in a circle for quite some time, maintaining the same distance between us all, even when someone was removed from or added to the group, or when a change of pace or direction was added into the mix. I wasn't quite expecting rehearsals for such a text-heavy play to be so physically demanding, but as Jez explained, with a large cast and most of us being on stage for pretty much the entire performance, forging an understanding of how we move and interact with others during large chunks of the play where we may not be speaking is pretty important at an early stage. We've also been conducting a lot of research and asking a lot of questions about our characters and their relationships with others in the play, their occupations and their social standings, etc. Things will naturally take on a different dynamic in terms of the group once we begin putting the meat on the bare bones of the play that we're currently exploring. But most of all, in these early moments, it's just been fascinating to learn the processes that the production team put to use on this one. And I'm really looking forward to how it all plays out over the coming weeks. Now, if you've not heard me talk about the production before, The Welkin is set in 1759 on the Norfolk-Suffolk border and concerns a character called Sally Poppy, who was accused of murder. When Sally claims to be pregnant in order to win herself a stay of execution, a jury of 12 matrons is appointed to determine whether she's telling the truth. The story largely focuses on the deliberations of the women whilst shut away in the courthouse. It is fascinating and gripping, and I'm so excited to be involved. The show is on from the 13th to the 22nd of October at the Sewell Barn Theatre in Norwich, and as much as I'd like to tell you to go out and get yourself some tickets for it, the Barn hasn't yet pulled its finger out, so the website tells you incorrectly that their current production is under Milkwood. Amateurs, eh? Anyway, we move on to the main feature, and I'd like to introduce you to a couple of creatives who form part of the professional team working on the Theatre Royal Bury St Edmunds in-house community production of The Secret Garden. The play has been specially adapted for the theatre by neurodivergent playwright Nicola Veronowska, and the production features a mixed cast of professional actors and local young people. One of those professionals is Olivia Carruthers, who is playing Mrs. Medlock in the show, and another is David Whitney, who is the co-director. And they are both here with me now. So, without further ado, which is a shame because I do so enjoy an ado, here is an interview with Olivia Carruthers and David Whitney. Hi there, Olivia and David. Thanks for joining me. Firstly, and most importantly right now, are you currently sat somewhere air-conditioned?
No.
No, although I have a fan next to me that's blowing air onto my legs, so that's what I'm doing for air-conditioning currently.
It's a lot cooler right now. There was a tiny spot of rain a minute ago.
Oh, okay. So are you somewhere near Bury St Edmunds at the moment?
I'm in Long Melford, a village near.
Yeah, I'm in Norwich. We haven't seen anything like moisture for a couple of weeks now.
That's right.
Now, the story of The Secret Garden isn't one that really needs an introduction, being a much-loved children's classic. Presumably that was a major factor in both your involvement in the production.
From my point of view, just to give a bit of context, so I'm co-directing this production with Owen Calvert-Lyons, our artistic director. So my other role at the theatre was head of creative learning. So I've been in post for about 2 months now. So when I started at the theatre, it was one of my sort of things that was part of my duties was to co-direct the sort of production. So for me, The Secret Garden is something that I've always been aware of. It's actually a story I never studied or looked at closely during my education or anything like that. So it was actually quite a new story for me, which was quite exciting for me.
Yeah, from my point of view, I live in Suffolk now. I've lived here only really since the COVID time. We bought moved from London. My husband and I bought a house in Long Melford. And so I then have on my details as an actress on Spotlight, I put the fact that I've got a base in Suffolk and in London. And so Owen asked me to read the part of Mrs. Medlock, which is the part I'm playing, during the initial stages of the writing or the first stage of it being heard. So a sort of reading for and it's this has been supported by local people. I can't remember what we call them. We call them angels in the theatre, but I think they've got a different name. I can't remember what
they're called. The commissioning circle.
That the commissioning circle. They're a lovely group of people, and they sat and they listened to this. So I played Mrs. Medlock, and I thought it was beautifully written, really beautifully written. And we met the writer. I do know the story really well because I adapted the story for myself for a company that I run, which is called Teach It Through Drama, and as a storytelling session with children involved, taking on the role. So I know the story really well, and I had adapted it myself in a different way. So that's another reason why I thought it was very well done. So I did read the book. I think the book is very long for children. I remember reading it, I suppose about 5 years ago I did the adaptation, and I thought it was quite hard work for children to read. You know, it's quite a difficult book. So this, again, great adaptation, brought it up to date.
So in terms of your first exposure to the story, so neither of you had read the book as a child. Had you previously come across any of the film or TV adaptations at all?
Yes.
Not at all for me. Nothing at all. Yeah. So my first interaction with the full narrative was the script that I read.
Wow, yeah. Interesting.
Yeah, it's interesting because, like, you know, there are other people same age to me and peers of mine who studied it at school and at college, whatever it might be, but for some reason for me it just kind of passed me by. So I've approached this sort of modern version just with fresh eyes, really. So it's been sort of quite nice from that point of view, and to educate myself on it a little bit.
Regarding the film, yes, I had seen them. I didn't not read the book as a child. I did know the story, but I don't know whether I had read it or I had it read to me at school, you know, one of those things when you're in primary school. And I'm an awful lot older than David, and when I have told people that I'm doing this production, people under 40 say to me, I'm saying under 40, maybe under 50, say to me, oh, it's my favorite film. Mm-hmm. And people over that age say, oh, it's my favorite book. So it's now become more of a film, because there've been quite a lot of films. There was a new one recently with Julie Walters in it, which I decided to watch this weekend. I thought I would just look at it after we'd worked, you know, we've worked on the show now, we know what we're doing. I didn't want to watch it beforehand, but it's a very different adaptation, this very new one, 2020 version.
So actually, this is a question for David, given that you haven't really sort of been exposed to it, knowing that you'd be involved in the project, was it a deliberate choice to not expose yourself to the book and to any of the film or TV adaptations?
I guess so, in some respect. This is an adaptation made for our venue and for the people we're working with. I didn't want to be influenced too much by anything else that I'd seen or heard elsewhere. I wanted to tell the story in the version that we had and not to be clouded too much by other interpretations. I think sometimes it can be helpful to watch other things and be inspired. But, you know, the version that we're doing is completely unique to our venue and what we're setting out for ourselves. You know, for example, in our version, we have a whole ensemble of young people who are playing the guardians of the secrets who kind of interweave throughout the story. And there's no other adaptation or production that's kind of done that before in that way. And so therefore, we had to break new ground with it. We had to try and retell it in a new way. And I think sometimes when you come up with something completely fresh, your approach is just to tell the story in the best way that you can. And as a director, that's what you are always trying to strive to do. I don't want to tell someone else's version of it. I want to tell our version of it and what we're making.
And just in terms of this adaptation, it was by Nicola, I'm going to make a meal of pronouncing her surname. Is it
Aronowska? Yeah.
What are the sort of the main themes of her adaptation of the production? Because obviously some of the issues in the novel involve issues such as class, gender, and to a certain extent disability. Are any of these themes remaining, or is there other issues that are brought to the forefront?
I would say that she has kept the sort of sense of those themes running through our production with regards to class and those things. With regards to disability, in the original story of The Secret Garden, it's written as though Colin sort of magically gets cured of his disability and all of a sudden he's better. That's a happy ending for that character. But as we know, in real life, you can't just magically be cured of a disability. And so we wanted to kind of reframe it so that it made sense for a modern audience and it was celebrating people's abilities or disabilities. So in our version, Colin doesn't magically become well again and starts walking. He realizes that the strength that he has, his inner strength, and he understands that he has a purpose in the world and that it's not all going to be as bad as he thinks it's going to be. I think what you have to remember as well, and we play on quite a lot, is the period of the piece. So we're still keeping it in 1910 and how disabilities were perceived then very differently to how they're perceived now. Medical science wasn't where it is now. And so a lot of people did think that people who had disabilities didn't have much chance of a life and there wasn't the same treatments around there are now. But in our version, Nikki tries to celebrate that disability. We try to get across that Colin will have a quality of life and he just needs to step outside, you know, and into the garden with his, and he's found new friends in Mary and in Dickon as well. So there's other things to live for. So yeah, that's kind of the tact that we've taken with it.
Yeah. And in terms of the production itself, is there any particular sort of personal highlights or an element of the show that you think will particularly stick in the memory of audiences?
Well, I think the fact that there are six wonderful children who are such brilliant actors in this show. We've got two sets of three children who are on stage. Well, the character of Mary is on stage all the time. She carries the show, and that's a huge responsibility. And these two young girls who are playing the role are wonderful. And I think that's the first thing that people are going to take away with them. From my point of view, they're lovely to work with, really lovely to work with, because it's quite, you know, it's quite nerve-wracking thinking these children are going to carry the show. And they are doing it beautifully. Very, very good actors. Very well disciplined. Long hours, although the audience don't know that. But very long hours that we've worked with them and they are wonderful. I think that's the main thing. David probably got other things he'd like to say about it.
Yeah, I think this is our third iteration of this sort of project where every summer we sort of mix professional cast with young people. Last year we did Holes. in the previous years, you've done Goodnight, Mr. Tom, and Our Day Out was the first of the iterations. And I think there's something quite special and magical about that combination. And we've got, I think it's maybe 19 young people all together. So we've double cast it. So there's sort of 7 or 8 in each company. There is something quite nice because the whole play is about growth and it's about learning about who you are and your place in the world. There's something about the intergenerational aspect of the story that really works with this idea of mixing younger cast members with older cast members. And I think for me, the audience, I think there'll be lots of nice moments that the audience will enjoy. I think for me, there's a lot of reflection in this production. And I think, you know, I mean, I was writing some of the program notes for the day, and I just, not to kind of repeat myself, but this play does deal with growth and with grief. And I think, you know, the past few years, you know, we've, as a society, experienced a lot of those things. And this idea of stepping outside into the sun and experiencing the world and uncovering things that we didn't know were there, and is a really lovely analogy, you know, comparing to what we've been through recently with the pandemic. And I think, you know, I think there'll be a lot of reflection on those things in the production. Also, as well, in this production, which I think is lovely, is there's a lot of, I don't want to spoil too much. I want to keep some secrets back myself, but we're working with the auditorium in a quite different way to what we normally work with. So that'd be interesting. And then there's also some interesting things that we do with the set that are quite revealing too. So those things, I think, will stick in the audience's mind as well. There's a lot of things you can take from it, no matter what age you are.
Mm. And the production itself is labelled as an accessible production. Can you sort of expand on that a little bit more?
So the thing is, when we commissioned this, we wanted to make it an accessible production because it deals with access and disability as one of its main themes. And so we will have opportunities throughout the run for audiences to come and have access for any performances. So I think I might have the date wrong on top of my head, but it's Saturday, 27th of August. We have a touch tour and access performance. So for those young people who might have additional needs, they can come onto stage and experience the set and the costumes before watching the show. And every single one of our performances is also captioned as well. So that means that, you know, if you're hard of hearing or you just prefer to read text rather than listen to it, the captions will be there for every single performance. So it was really important to us that we tried to make a production that reflected what the writer was trying to achieve. And as in a theatre, we're always trying to look for new ways to make productions more accessible and more inclusive. So this is the next sort of step we're taking as a venue.
That's fantastic. Just moving back to a little bit of the theme of the Secret Garden, it's obviously the garden itself seemingly has restorative powers, although you've mentioned you're perhaps not going to play with the sort of literal restorative powers in terms of seemingly curing a disability. But personally, do you have any belief in the restorative power of nature?
Yes. During the time when we were locked down, for instance, I think a lot of people said that they found we were allowed to go out, weren't we? It's crazy to imagine that we were allowed to go out, I think, to do things like walking for an hour or two. I can't remember what it was now. Yeah. And I'm very lucky that I've got a garden. And I really, not for the first time, but I realized how much pleasure you can get just from being in the open air, looking at plants, watching nature. I used to go for a walk in the village that I'm living in now, Long Melford. And I pretty much did the same walk every day. But every day I saw things happening in nature. And it was really the first time that I properly looked and got great pleasure from it, just taking photographs and things. And my garden has been a lifesaver. I absolutely love it. And I've taken to it now. I've got quite a big garden now. It takes a lot of work. And it really gives me huge pleasure. But I have always loved gardens from being a little child. And a lot of the plants that I now have in my garden are from the memories that I have as a child in the summer. The blossoms, I'll say, I want that one because that reminds me of a very happy summer and blah, blah. So I think it can do all sorts of things. And it is truly one of the best restorative things that we have around us. And it's virtually free. You can just nurture anything that's there, just like Mary does in The Secret Garden.
Just moving on to your own sort of personal histories in the theatre, can you pick out a favourite production that you've been involved in to date?
Well, I'll say one thing, because this is a very hard question for an actor, because all productions are, you know, you get something really special out of them all. However, just a few months ago, I went to work. I was called up and asked, would I be in a three-hander in London for a production? Yeah, Three Women, a new play. I didn't audition for it. They called up my agent and said, we want Olivia to do it. And I said, oh, crap. I thought, hey, this can't be very good if they're just not even going to audition me. I have a showreel. And so they've seen the show. I'd heard later they'd seen the showreel and they decided that was it. They wanted me, which seems crazy now. And I worked with just about one of the best directors I've ever worked with in my life. She was 28 years of age. The writer and the director met at university and they were in Norwich. They were at UEA. And they were two of the most brilliant women I've ever worked with. I had the best time. It was the most wonderful show. It was packed out every night. And there you go. It's one of those things where you get asked to do something that you weren't expecting. And it was the first bit of theatre I'd done since the lockdown. Yeah. Just fantastic. About three generations of women. I'll say no more than that, except I'll say that the director, Martha Gielan, look out for her, because I think she is going to be a superstar in the future. If she's not, there's something very wrong. She's already working with Trevor Nunn.
David?
Well, yeah, I mean, I hate doing favourites because I can never do a favourite. There's always, because different projects speak to me in different ways, depending on where I'm at. Within my job and within the work that I do, I get to work with lots of young people, schools and communities on a weekly basis. And some of those projects that I get to do are incredible. And I feel very privileged to be part of that process. But if you're asking me just to put my nail to the wall of a production, it would probably have to be something early on in my career when I first did a sort of major production with just young people. And in 2016, I directed at the Theatre Royal, funnily enough, a production of Cares. And it was the first time that I got a main house production on my CV in that sense, with just young people. And it was a play and a story that I absolutely adored as a child and stuff. And it was a real sort of passion project. I was very fortunate because we had a cohort of young people, our three leads especially, who have gone on to do absolutely phenomenal things with their careers. And it was just a very sort of magical year where we just had some really exceptional young people on our stages. So that for me was something that really I absolutely adored being part of, and every day was just the best. So that for me would probably be a project and production that really stands out. But I think day to day in my weekly work, I get to do a lot of work with young people who are neurodivergent and have additional needs. So we have a whole youth theatre nonverbal program at Theatre Royal, which we run two groups every week. And so we have this delivery style that is really accessible and inclusive. So I get to do that once a week with my team. And that's a really incredible initiative that I absolutely adore being part of as well. So I could wax lyrical about all the different projects that I love being part of. And it's really hard to just pick one, but there we are.
Yeah, I can imagine that the sort of the neurodivergent group, that must be in particular quite rewarding, because I guess you can see a much more measurable growth in the children in particular.
It's an interesting one because the way that is delivered is unlike any other group that I deliver or my team delivers, because it's all led by them, as in it's all kind of where they're sitting and landing on any given day. But you're quite right, Ray, in some respects, you know, we have some of those young people who come who are incredibly reticent, or just, you know, it's very different for them. But that's the whole reason why they're coming, because the parents or their guardians are trying to give them a bit of an outlet or something which they can play in a safe space and feel valued and respected. And we try and nurture that environment for them as best we can. And yes, some of the growth and some of the journeys that some of those young people have been on has been incredible. And I feel very proud and privileged that I'm part of a program like that. And that program's only growing as well. So, you know, and we're funded very kindly by GWIS charity locally. And so we do some incredible work. So, yeah. And that's something that's kind of plays into a lot of my practice and work that I love doing with young people.
Has the creative arts always been the intended career path for both of you?
Yeah, mine has. Yeah. So I just feel very lucky because it's not an easy path. It's getting worse. When I was very little, I just liked performing, really. And it was encouraged. I'm from the north of England. I'm from the north. I'm from Lancashire. Morecambe was, when I was little, had lots of theatres. And I remember going to theatre and when I was a little, and just being, I mean, I just loved it. I can remember, very much remember the first performance I went to. It was a place that's the Winter Gardens in Morecambe. And I think it was a pantomime, but it was really brilliant. And I was quite scared. But it made me realise that theatre is a thing. My mother always loved dancing and singing, would like to have been an actress, but, you know, she was alive during the war and it's not the sort of thing that you do, and she didn't do it. So I think she encouraged that. She actually died when I was 16, and that was a tragedy in our life. So I have this grief thing, but we had to move house at that point, and I ended up in a place where there was this wonderful drama course. I would not have known how to be an actress without that. It's like the same as they have it at Bury St Edmunds, they have a young people's theatre. And without those things, children have no idea how to become an actor or work in the creative industry. Just, they need to be guided in a direction. And that's what happened to me. And so this, what could have been a very sad situation turned into a very good one for me. I went on, did a course. I did my A levels and at the same time did a drama course. And they told me how to go to drama school, and I did that. And the rest is history. And I have never done anything except worked in the creative world. I mean, I've done a lot of teaching of drama. I even worked in a comprehensive school once as the head of creative arts. So I have never had to do anything else. I've literally all my life worked in the world of sort of acting and performing. And that's not, I'm not a well-known actress, but I have earned a living and I'm so grateful for it.
Quite interesting, because Olivia and I are both in the same part of the world. I'm originally from Lancashire as well. I'm from Salford. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I've always wanted to work in the creative arts. I've always been musical or theatrical. That's kind of been my sort of go-to when I was at school. You know, drama at my school wasn't great, but I joined a local, well, it was run by the council actually, it's still going, the music was called MAPAS, and, you know, for like 30 quid for the year or something, I can't remember, it was really cheap for Salford residents. You could be part of the orchestra, the musical theatre society, and I just joined everything, and mm-hmm. like driving me around all over the place to all these different groups, just trying to like, so I did that, and then I did a performing arts course at a performing arts college in Salford, and then I went to uni, then dropped out because I realised I wanted to purely focus and actually train as an actor. Went to drama school in London. And then after coming out of drama school, treaded the boards a little bit and still do from time to time, but sort of the directing kind of came to light, and that's something I really enjoyed. And especially that sort of work with younger people and getting them where they need to be. And that found that really rewarding. And that's kind of the trajectory that I've gone on since. So I get to, again, like Olivia, and I know it sounds it can sound a little bit false, but I do feel very, very lucky that I get to work in a career where I get to do lots of different things that all kind of are very different. Each day is really different. You know, some days I'm just working with just young people and we're doing a little tiny project. And then some days I'm working on a larger scale project like this, where, you know, we've got professional actors coming in and like that needs a different headspace as well. And, you know, and I think there's so much joy to be found in the work that we do. So, and I think it is harder. I do get, but I also feel, I always say this to young people that, you know, if you want a career doing this, then you got to go for it. You got to just do it, because otherwise, what's the point? You know, and I like because even within our young company, we also have a cohort of young technicians as well, you know, and, you know, we're opening up opportunities wherever possible so that young people can sort of see that there are many careers they can have in the arts. They don't have to necessarily be always on stage. They could be in our marketing department, front of house, in box office, in our development department working with fundraisers, in our administrative department, or in our technical crew. Or, you know, there's so many different roles in which young people can go into. And sometimes that's not always very well taught, I don't think, at a young age. People just see, the theatre is just about being on stage and being an actor. A lot of it is. But a lot of it's also not as well.
It's also good training for life, you know.
Yes, absolutely.
As an actor, you do a lot of auditioning and you've got to be able to present yourself. I used to say that when I was teaching young people, because their mothers, their parents would say, oh, I don't want to be an actor, they'll never get a job. And I'd say, but it's not about that. It's about learning to be, looking people in the eye, being able to speak and being confident, trying to be confident anyway, even if you're not actually feeling it. And that's what actors do. They're terrified most of the time, but they look as if they're very confident. And so it's a good training, whatever happens.
Yeah, and I think Olivia will, I mean, I don't want to put words in Olivia's mouth, but just coming back a bit to the Secret Garden, you know, some of those young people have gone on huge journeys during this process and have really, really grown in confidence and just independence as well, because it's not always about being confident, but it's about taking the initiative or being the mature one in the group going, we need to focus now, everyone. You know, I'm pulling people, pulling rank, you know, and so I'm being that voice for the group is really important. And like Libby says, it's skills for life. And so many of our young people who do these projects and programs, you know, become much more confident, independent human beings as part of that process, because they've put themselves out there on a platform, you know, publicly.
And you've only got a few days to go before the show opens. So there's obviously quite a bit of excitement, I'd imagine, amongst the cast, particularly the younger ones, I should imagine, to get the show opened.
Yeah, I mean, today, everyone's going to see the full set for the first time up on the stage. And that's going to be a real game changer, I think, this week. You know, we start our tech today and, you know, we're going to start teching our show and plotting it and getting it looking slick and polished ready for Friday. So, but I think once the set is there and the set's beautiful, I think that's going to be really a real moment.
The children just take it in their stride, you know.
Yeah.
It's no big deal for them. They're doing it and they're doing it really well.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like, well, this is part of our life. I was expecting some of them to maybe drop out or look bored or I don't know, but I mean, they are there. And they are doing it. And it's just, this is what I signed up for this summer, and I'm going to do it. And they're amazing.
Yeah.
Some of them have never trodden on the stage before, I could tell. Because one of the things I said to some of them is just stand still with your feet together. Mm-hmm. Just stand firm on the ground, because they don't know how to stand on a stage. Starting with that, really. And I'm not talking about the three leads. I'm talking about the group who are the guardians of the secret. And they walk on stage and they don't look as if they've ever been on a stage before. And maybe some of them haven't. So it's right. We're starting from scratch with them. And as David said, they're building confidence, but they are taking it in their stride, as young people do.
And I think as well, I might be wrong here, but I think a majority of the professional cast, I think this might be some of their first time performing at Theatre Royal Bury St Edmunds as well. And I think Olivia can probably talk about it a bit better than I can, but maybe you could just describe like what it's like to be in that auditorium. You know, it's quite unique, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a very special place, actually. I mean, the first time I went to the theatre and sat in the auditorium, I've been in all the different seats and seen things. And it's a cosy, intimate place, but it's got such history. And so you think to yourself, my word, 200 years ago, somebody sat here and watched, I don't know what, a Victorian play, a music hall, I don't know. You feel the history. You feel the ghosts of those people in a good way. And standing on stage is the same. It's a fantastic. And do you know, they've offered me my own dressing room. There are so many dressing rooms. I usually have to share and I'm not bothered.
But it was in Olivia's rider that she had to have her own dressing room.
Wasn't, so. You know, and I have to say that isn't true. I got the tiniest one. And I don't
joking,
care.
Olivia.
I know you are. I know you are. But no, somebody, one of the cast, has got the Dame Judi Dench dressing room. And I
so
thought,
perhaps having your own dressing room isn't quite the compliment that it's landing.
No, maybe not. But it's such a wonderful theatre with such a wonderful vibe. Lovely to work in, really gorgeous. So I'm looking forward to going and seeing the set today.
Okay, well, yeah, that's about all we've got time for, really. So I'm looking forward to coming and seeing it on opening night. And thanks for your time, both of you.
Yeah, nice to meet you.
Thank you.
Take care now. Bye. Bye-bye.
So there we have it. That was Olivia and David from the Theatre Royal Bury St Edmunds in-house production of The Secret Garden. What do you think of my interview style, David?
Huge fan.
Well, thanks very much. If you want to see the product of their hard work, you can watch The Secret Garden between the 19th of August and the 3rd of September. As David mentioned, all performances will be captioned for the hard of hearing, and you can go along on the 27th of August for a touch tour, and the performance that evening will also be audio described. Tickets are available via theatreroyal.org. Now, what else is coming up in the region in the next few weeks? Well, firstly, Boxtree Productions is bringing their tour of The Three Musketeers to Norfolk as they play the Westacre Theatre in King's Lynn on Saturday the 20th of August at 2:30 p.m. It's a family-friendly, open-air musical and tickets are available via thelittleboxoffice.com. Over in Ipswich, the Magpie performers are holding auditions for their panto, Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. Parts are available for adults and children of all ages, and the auditions take place on the 30th of August at the Sir John Mills Theatre in Ipswich. And finally, staying in Suffolk, the Deben Players have a comical, music-filled play on offer called Cheshire Cats. It's on at the Seckford Theatre in Woodbridge from the 14th to the 17th of September, And tickets are available via debenplayers.net. That's D-E-B-E-N players.net. And that's all I have time for this time. Thanks so much for listening to me, Olivia, and David ramble on. I do appreciate it, despite my slightly unenthusiastic tone. And tune in next time to listen to me talk turkey some more and speak with Christopher Sainton Clark from Raising Cane Productions. Until next time, take care of yourselves and go watch some theatre. Bye.